everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and we've got a tough loss to take in as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 76. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films as we break down the Eagles coming off their first loss of the 2016 season. Greg and I will give you our thoughts on what we saw on both sides of the ball before we give you a preview of those Washington Redskins. Next up, we've got Scouting Report, where I want to talk about a player that's really coming to his own this year, his second season with the Washington Redskins offense after starting as a rookie last year. Lastly, we will wrap it up with Two Technique, where this week I caught up with Eagles defensive back Terrence Smith to break down one of the key roles in basic cover three. We've got a ton to get into this week, so let's not waste any time. Greg and I talk about this Eagles-Redskins matchup after going over the loss to Detroit with a fine-tooth comb. So let's get to that segment now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL film senior producer Greg Cosell. Greg, welcome back to the NovaCare Complex. It's been a couple days, long couple days, since we last saw you here on Sunday afternoon for the Eagles' first loss of the 2016 season. So I know you've gone through the tape on both sides of the ball. Let's get your thoughts, and I'll share some of my thoughts as well. Let's start offensively. I think you and I talked a little bit off air, not just because of the interception, but overall I thought it was probably, not that he was awful, but I would say it was probably Wentz's worst game of the first four in terms of ball placement. I thought the ball placement wasn't great throughout the day. I know you mentioned some missed throws as well.
Yeah.
Definitely showed great flashes, and I covered some of those flashes in my column recapping the offense, which just got posted on Tuesday night. So you could check that out right now on the website and on the app. But what were your thoughts coming away from watching Wentz?
Yeah, and again, I think the standard he set through the first three wins was high.
Of course.
And there's an expectation that, wow, this kid's just going to be great every week. And I think we have talked, I know I have, that it's not going to work that way every week. And I thought in this game, Fran, that just mentally he was at times a beat slow. At times his eyes were in the wrong place, even on plays that turned out to be completions and positive plays. But I think he missed some things. And again, ultimately to me, this game is a great piece of tape for him to learn.
No doubt.
And I think when you're a young quarterback, the key is learning from these things. You know, when plays are called and you get the coverage or coverages that the plays work against and the plays are there, those are the plays you have to execute. And I think he missed a few of those. He just, for whatever reason, it didn't register, or he took his eyes away from where they should be too soon. I mean, even like I said, there were some completions. He had a completion to Aguilar on a crosser,
yep,
which was their basic staple three-level stretch concept with Aguilar coming from the backside across the field. He was a beat late with the throw, and the throw was not really accurate.
Yep.
But it was still caught for a gain. Just little things. And this is what coaches work on. You know, they work on these things. They use the tape as a learning experience for a young quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I thought that's what I was, one of the things I actually mentioned in the piece was I thought that the receivers made some plays for him.
You know,
and look, it didn't happen on the final play, obviously. But overall, I thought his receivers went up and fought for the ball. DGB on a shallow cross made a catch behind his body. You mentioned the play by Aguilar. There were some plays where his guys went up and fought for the ball, some that were left on the field. But certainly a learning experience for a young quarterback, something that he can take in the next game against a defense that is similar in some ways, schematically, in terms of like the zone concepts and things like that, similar in a lot of ways, the Detroit Lions and Redskins defense. We'll get to Washington in a little bit later. Run game-wise, what did you think overall from what they were able to do up front on the ground? You saw some different things. We saw a little bit more of the jet. We saw the quarterback run game a little bit more.
We saw a trap,
which we haven't seen in a long time here in Philadelphia, which was really well executed.
Well, watching the tape and even watching the game when we were watching it here on Sunday, I was thinking to myself, how much are they going to really ask Carson Wentz to get involved in the run game by design? And for me, I hope not too much.
Yep.
I obviously, he can run, and he's a great athlete. But you know, I would just be careful with that. I really would, no matter how big and athletic you are. I just don't think that should be used very, very selectively. Go ahead. I just don't think that should be part of.
I do think, though, that having the ability to do it gives the defense something else to game plan for. And
no question.
Another layer to the offense.
No question. I think overall the run game to me was, you know, I didn't feel like, and maybe it's because the Lions had some long drives early.
Yeah.
I never felt like, both watching the game live and watching the tape, it just didn't have the same rhythmic feel, either the run game or the offense.
Yeah.
I thought the offense became more a series of individual plays as opposed to a rhythmic feel.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about when they started with the Chicago game on Monday night, when they got the ball and they go empty and boom, 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 you know, no huddle. And right away, you just start to feel a rhythm develop. This game did not have any real rhythm to it offensively.
A lot of people were thinking that this would be a big tight end game for the Eagles from a production standpoint. The Lions allowed 5 touchdowns to the tight end position through the first 4 games, so a lot of fans were really hoping that that would be the case. They didn't put up outstanding numbers. There were a lot of – it was interesting to see all the multiple ways that they were used, though. You saw some 13 personnel and empty. You saw some 12 personnel and empty. You saw Trey Burton and Zach Ertz and Selleck moved around the formation. And there were some plays, you know, I remember Ertz running across the field in the intermediate on a 3-level stretch and pressure forced Wentz to go elsewhere.
Right.
There were lots of scenarios where they were trying to set those up.
Yeah, and I think that's part of this offense. It's an offense with many dimensions, multiple dimensions, a lot of different personnel packages, a lot of different looks. They get to staple plays a lot of different ways. I mean, every week we talk about the dagger or the 96 combination, which that was one of his best throws, I thought, when he hit Matthews between people. Really good throw. I mean, we talked 3-level stretch. The other thing what's the other play? I can't think of it that they run a lot. Well, the dagger, exactly. Right.
Well, what was impressive about that dagger was a lot of the times we've seen him throw it so far, that clear out route takes that middle of the field defender.
Yes,
and this time the middle of the field defender was still there coming from the opposite side of the field, and he still was able to fit it into that window.
Well, what I really liked as well was the fact, number one, that he made the throw.
Sure, exactly.
Because you have to make those throws in the NFL, and that was a true tight window throw. And he stuck it right there. And that's I think, what ultimately, just from the physical ability part of this, I really like about Wentz, is he's capable of driving the ball with velocity when necessary, and he's capable of throwing with touch when necessary. And, again, I don't know what people expect, but I'm certainly not surprised with a game like this where he wasn't as sharp mentally and maybe wasn't as sharp physically as well. But given that, it wasn't as if it was a bad performance.
We're going to talk about how this will impact Sunday's game.
Right, right.
But obviously the loss of Lane Johnson, who was announced, his suspension was announced earlier today, on Tuesday we're recording this. How does that impact the offensive line? And what did you see from Halapulavati Vaitai, Big V?
Big V.
I'll let you off the hook and just
there you
say
go.
Big V.
There you go.
What did you see from Big V in the preseason as well as at TCU?
You know, it's funny. I kind of liked him at TCU. He played left tackle. I remember specifically watching his games against DeForest Buckner and Emmanuel Agba. You know, obviously one was a top 10 pick and the other was an early second
round. Early second
pick.
That we kind of thought was maybe a little bit reach there. It's an early second. But
which, by the way, the film through the regular season so far in Cleveland shows, because now he's being played at 3-4 D end. But anyway, I thought he handled himself well against both those players.
Yep.
I think, you know, he was a player who I thought had light feet for his size, but was very inconsistent in the way in which he played, which is why he's a fifth-round pick and not a second- or third-round pick. But I think, and I made a note because I went back and looked at my notes, as I'm sure you did, I made the point that he would not be a left tackle in the NFL, that he would line up at right tackle, and that's exactly the opportunity he's going to get now.
It's interesting that, the loss of Lane is big. I mean, you could probably say pretty safely that he was the best offensive lineman through 4 games. I don't know if that's something that you felt after watching.
Believe it or not, I think Barber's played pretty well.
Barber's played pretty well, too.
It's tough to compare. They play different positions, but I actually think Barber's played pretty well.
Yeah, so you know, you lose Lane. Vaitai, it's really interesting. You know, I go back and I rewatched all of his snaps from the preseason this afternoon for a segment that we're going to put in Eagles game plan this week. And he was a lot better than my memory served. You know, when I'm watching preseason, I'm not focused necessarily on one guy, especially when you get to that part of the game, because he was playing with the third string O-line. he played pretty well, and he's got lighter feet than my memory serves.
That's exactly what I said when I looked back at my notes. I made that note. They had lighter feet.
Yeah,
because he's a big dude.
He's a big dude.
Yeah,
he's heavy hands.
Yes,
you could tell both in the run game and the pass game. There were a few times against the Jets, and I'm not going to be able to fit all these plays into the segment on game plan, but where he punches a guy, and you could see the lineman jump back a good yard. I mean, he's got really heavy hands in the run and pass game, constantly kept himself in good position. He was able to make some backside blocks in the zone run game away. Overall, just did a really good job. So I'm really excited to see him.
He's
going to
get a good test this week. He's going to get a lot of snaps against Ryan Kerrigan.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that and what Washington could potentially do for Vitae in this game. But let's transition to defense. Obviously, their worst game in terms of numbers and execution against the Detroit Lions on Sunday. And really, at start, I mean, they gave up three touchdowns in the three drives, and it was not much after that.
No.
What did you see from the defense overall? What was some of your big takeaways?
I thought it was an odd game, Fran, because I didn't feel like watching the tape, I didn't come away going, wow, this defense played badly. There really weren't many big plays. There were a few critical plays, which when you lose always can be pointed out. You know, third down plays, like I remember the completion to Bolden getting down to about the 4 or 3 yard line, where it was third and 11, and he beat Brooks, I believe it was.
Yeah, I think it was either Brooks or Malcolm.
It was Malcolm. Yeah. It was Malcolm. You're correct. And, one thing that stood out to me was the number of outside runs that the Lions had in this game, both with Tate and with Riddick.
Especially early.
Early.
Yeah.
So they felt they couldn't work inside, or they felt that they had an opportunity to get outside. Either way, they were effective.
Yeah. There were two big ones in the first two drives, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that stood out. But as the game progressed, I mean, Benny Logan, I thought, was outstanding. I mean, he just dominated. He got their left guard, Tomlinson, benched. So it was an odd game for the defense. There were too many penalties, but it wasn't a game where they were gashed. You came away thinking this defense has holes that need to be fixed.
The Lions definitely showed some things offensively that we had never seen. The Eagles had never
Tate,
seen.
No, with Tate in the,
in
know,
the
behind Stafford and the pistol, and they did some things with that. Obviously, we broke down on Sunday the touchdown to Riddick where Tate was in the pistol behind Stafford. This was the second touchdown, and they used misdirection so beautifully.
That was beautiful.
That was just a great offensive play that broke down the defense.
Yeah, no question. And then you look at Brandon Graham, I thought, had another strong game, and he played a ton of snaps. Vinnie Curry's snap count was down. I think it's because you saw Brandon Graham's snap count and Connor Barwin both played a ton of snaps, especially in the second half. You mentioned Benny Logan. He was outstanding. I thought Jordan Hicks had a strong game, and Nigel Bradham in the second half was outstanding. A lot of people made a big deal about Nigel Bradham not playing in the first half. I mean, he played 18 of the first 20 snaps. He just didn't play in sub-package on the third drive. So on the third drive, he didn't play sub-package. That happened to be the Lions' longest drive of the game. It went 12 plays.
Kendricks played.
Kendricks played in that drive in sub. And so that became one of the narratives that was quickly squashed, I think, on Monday. But overall, I agree. It was kind of one of those games where in key moments where the Eagles had come up with big stops, there was just one play. Fletcher Cox's fingers get stuck in Matthew Stafford's helmet, and Randy rips it off, and that's a penalty. And now it's first and goal. Things like that where just constantly were able to get the Lions in better field position.
It's funny. Coaches, and we talked about this with Wentz, coaches deal with absolutes. So for instance, when Wentz, completes a ball, and it's a good play as far as watching the game, but he missed something, they deal with that coaching. If Ryan Matthews doesn't fumble and the Eagles win this game, we're not talking about the defense. We're saying, hey, they came through in the second half when they had to.
45 yards allowed in the second half.
Right. So that's why I said it was an odd game defensively, where there's some things I'm sure Jim Schwartz was really disappointed in, and I guarantee he let people know about it. But it was not, like I said, there were no real big pass plays. I mean, was there a pass play more than 20 yards? Or if there were, it was one.
They would have been in that final one, the Golden Tate catch and run.
Right, correct. But, I mean, they really did not allow big chunk plays. Were they hurt on a couple of runs, coming out of different looks? Yes. But this, they even watching the first couple of drives, and we even watching it live, I just never felt like they were being gashed.
Yeah.
One
of the things that stood out to me in the second half was how well they rallied to the football.
Yeah.
So often, whether it was a screen play, an outbreaking route, you saw six, seven, eight, nine defenders all running to the football.
I'm sure
three
Coach
or four
Schwartz
guys
made that clear at halftime.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. It was definitely notable, or noticeable, I should say, once you started watching the tape there, especially in the
You know, it's going to be interesting. You know, you talked about the nickel and Kendricks playing on the third series, which he did. And there's just something about – Kendricks is such a good athlete – but in zone, he just struggles with spatial awareness and understanding of where he should be within his zone concepts. And I think he's always been like that, which is why a player who's so athletically gifted and you just assume should be a really good sub-package player is not.
That's a lesson to take with us going into the offseason and yes. looking at college linebackers yep. and saying, well, yep. look at the 40-yard dash and the three-cone. Oh, that guy's a great coverage player. A little bit more goes into
No, it, there's wait, no, it's route yeah. recognition, it's there's so much more. Because I've been one of those guys, I've always liked, I mean, how do you not like his physical skill set?
No doubt.
But it's just, I don't know, there's just something lacking in his awareness.
So let's talk about the team that this Eagles defense is going to be matched up against. You know, we were just about 15 minutes into this discussion, and we could probably go for 30 minutes, you and I, talking just about this Redskins offense, which presents so many different challenges. I told you before.
Schematically.
I mean, I could have written four pieces and yeah. produced two shows just on Washington's offense, all the different things that they present from schematics, formations, personnel groupings, and the way that they displace their receivers. Really, really interesting offense to watch, and they can beat you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, you just start with the personnel. I mean, particularly the weapons in the pass game. And Jordan Reed, a great tight end who can line up all over the formation. I think a player who rarely gets talked about, who I think is a tough cover, is Jamison Crowder.
He's really found a really nice niche in that
yeah.
offense.
I mean, obviously Deshaun can take the top off any defense. Pierre Garçon is still a really good intermediate route runner. But Crowder, to me, I mean, the two guys that stand out, because we all know about Deshaun and Garçon, but I think Crowder and Reed are really guys that pose problems. Crowder predominantly plays in the slot, but Reed is the guy that aligns all over the formation. And it's really the tight end that is the most – he's the formation guy, the formationing guy, let's put it that way.
Yep.
And I've read a lot of Bill Belichick talking about this with tight ends. Tight ends really dictate defensive deployment more than wide receivers, because wide receivers are wide receivers. Rarely, I mean, hey, did Golden Tate line up a few times in the backfield? But wide receivers are wide receivers. It's the tight ends that they cause the defensive deployment issues with their formationing. And Jordan Reed's one of those guys.
And they've got Vernon Davis and Niles Paul, who play a ton of snaps
Correct.
For them, and they put them all, whether they're
Correct.
In the backfield, whether in the slot, whether they're in line.
Niles Paul is a lead blocker in the straight eye.
And he was a receiver at Nebraska.
Correct. A wideout.
Yeah.
A wideout.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, it's a fun offense yep. to watch for, you know, for guys like you and I, where, you know, we're taking in what they do formation.
Well, we like looking at concepts in the pass game, because that's what the pass game is about. It's concepts.
Yeah.
It's not just, hey, let's drop back and throw the ball.
This is a team, though, that wants to run the football.
Yeah, and it's very up and down. You know, it's funny. There are some weeks I watch Matt Jones, and I come away thinking, that guy's a pretty good back.
You and I both liked him at Florida.
I did.
Yeah.
I liked him coming in. He was one of the last backs I watched that draft year, and I thought, wow, this guy's pretty good. Because he wasn't a big 1,000-yard rusher at Florida. But then there are other runs, and you've probably noticed this yourself. He had a run against the Giants that was beautifully blocked, and he never got through the hole. And it was a 1-yard gain that should have been an 8 or 9-yard gain at least.
Let me read you my note that I wrote after watching the first game. I think I watched their Cleveland game first. Was the first game I watched. Jones is very frustrating. Overall, very very physical, violent runner, but there are just some plays where he looks like he's got poor vision and does not have a feel for their run schemes, followed by a handful of plays where he looks like he's got a great feel
yes.
for what they do in the run game. Because there are some plays where you're like, wow, that was a really good run.
When they beat the Giants 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that game.
That game,
absolutely.
The final drive to set up the winning field goal, he carried the ball 8 times for 37 yards, and he looked like one of those horses, you know, one of those guys you ride. And then the next week he goes, 22 for 117, looks good. And then there's other times where he just looks sluggish to me. Like he just doesn't get to the hole quickly enough.
I was looking at Jay Gruden's press conference on Monday. He mentioned that they want to try and get Rob Kelly a little bit more involved and try and get him a few more carries. He said that he's earned it in the way that he's carried the football as well.
He had a really good run this week. It's probably their best run.
Yeah, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Chris Thompson out of the backfield. He scored a touchdown against the Eagles last year. Bit of a Theo Riddick light. I loved him at Florida State. Obviously, he had a lot of injuries and fell late.
He's their third down back, and it's funny you mentioned, you know, him being Theo Riddick light because he does at times line up detached from the formation, basically as a wide receiver, and he can do that.
You see him run those arrow routes as well out of the backfield. Kirk Cousins in 90 seconds or less. Sum it up. What are your overall feelings on Kirk Cousins? Because I think you and I see him pretty similarly.
Yeah, he's limited skill set wise. He's not a great thrower. I think everything has to work for him, and I think Jay Gruden does a really, really good job with his offensive design to help Kirk Cousins be as effective as he can be. Obviously, when things are working, Cousins does have the look of an efficient player, but there are a lot of limitations. If you can get bodies around him, the arm strength, which is probably average by NFL standards, becomes even less. And I think if you do get people around him, the decision-making at times can become an issue. He's a quarterback that if he's comfortable and the offense is functioning the way it's supposed to function and he feels secure in the pocket and he can throw with rhythm and timing, then he can be effective. Now, this raises a very interesting matchup question. The Eagles, I believe, have blitzed 16 times in four games. They're not a high-percentage blitz defense. Is this the week? Now, they're not all of a sudden going to become a 50 or 60% blitz team, but is this the week where there's a little more selective blitzing based on down and distance? Now, it also raises first down, which is a critical down. The Redskins are very good throwing the ball on first down. They do it out of base personnel.
Play action.
They get the opponent's base defense. So first down is a critical down in this game, not just the run game, but the pass game more importantly.
So you mentioned the potential to blitz more, and then it kind of segues into this offensive line, which they have quietly developed a really good offensive front. They lost Corey Lichtensteiger, who was their center. So they've moved Spencer Long in, who I think you liked. I loved him
coming out of Nebraska. He was a guard,
and they moved him into center. He's looked really good. Yeah. Brandon Scherff is a stud, who was a top 10 pick.
And Trent Williams, you know, I remember this summer going back and watching about 200 throws by Cousins, you know, just in the division, wanted to get a feel. You know, when you watch 200 plays in a row, it's different than watching it week to week.
Of course.
They leave Trent Williams alone. No one helps Trent Williams. And you know what? He doesn't need any help.
When he's not going up against Fletcher Cox, he looks like a top
right.
Fletcher Cox always takes his lunch money.
And Trent Williams, he has that recovery ability. There are times you think, oh, he's beat, and then he recovers.
Yeah.
So he allows them to do some other things with their pass protection because you pretty much can leave him alone.
And in the run game, he is so athletic for a guy that size.
Well, 2 weeks ago when he had to play guard for the second half, he looked like an all-pro guard.
Oh, my goodness. He is ridiculous. Yeah. And then they gave this guy a lot of money in the free agency a couple years ago, and he did not live up to it when he first got there. Sean Laval. He's played pretty well this year. I'll give him his due because he's looked pretty good.
Weak link, and weak's not the right word.
Sure,
is Morgan Moses.
Yeah,
very big man at right tackle. He's the player on the O line who probably has a few bad snaps every game, and you know, ideally, you turn those bad snaps into a sack, maybe a forced fumble, maybe a pick. You know, but he's the one guy that it seems like he has three or four bad snaps every game.
Are you a Jurassic Park fan? Did you watch the movie Jurassic Park?
I've never seen it.
I'm going to save the analogy then. I'll save it for the listeners then for after we discuss this because I don't want this to go over your head. Let's quickly transition to this Redskins defense, mainly under the scope of Halapulavati Vaitai.
Okay.
And what they can
easy
do.
Easy for you to say.
Yes. What they could do, what the Redskins could potentially do to try and attack him, isolate him, and put him in situations where, look, you're going up against a rookie offensive lineman that has not played a snap in the regular season.
Well, what you want to do is you want to isolate him in pass pro, and you want to force him to think by doing things like stunts and the occasional blitz where he has to think the game at the same time that he has to play the game. So you're going to see Ryan Kerrigan go up against him. That'll be the isolation matchup. Kerrigan is a master at technique and hand usage. That could be a real challenge for Vaitai.
He's been an Eagles killer his whole career.
And Kerrigan. He's so
he's so good with his hands and his use of leverage, understanding when the right tackle it might be just a little off balance or his base is too wide or too thin. This is what Kerrigan does exceptionally well, because he's not a true bend the edge, flexible speed rusher, but he's so good with hands, leverage, and understanding of how to rush the quarterback. And then again, like I said, you're going to see stunts for sure, because you want Vitae to have to be able to think the game.
Seems like most of their stunts have been inside.
Yes.
I agree, though. You might see more of that on the outside this week.
And what you're going to see is an alignment where they line up two players outside Vitae. We've seen that.
A lot of dime, and they'll do
it. It'll be Kerrigan, and it could be Kerrigan and Preston Smith. It could be Kerrigan and Trent Murphy. You know, again, just show different looks, because, you know, Vitae right now is at the point, and I say this honestly because I've talked to people about this, he just wants to get the play in the huddle and get to the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's where guys, when they play their first game, they just want to get to the line of scrimmage and say, okay, sure, I can run this play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's there'll be a lot on his plate.
Outside of the trenches, this is a defense that, you know, we talked about that front four. There are going to be opportunities for the Eagles here, because they've had a ton of moving parts because of injuries
and
a lot of the issues they've had in the secondary. I feel like they've played seven different safety combinations this year, eight different corner combinations.
Yeah.
They've lost, you know, David Bruton, and they, you know, they lost D'Angelo Hall. So, you know, you've got Iheanacho back there. They signed Dante Whitner last week off the street. Josh Evans, the former Florida safety, off the street. They've got who's the other starting safety? Will Blackman, a former corner.
I always thought Josh Evans would be a pretty decent player, but it didn't work out
in Jacksonville. But it sounds like Breshad Breeland may be back this week. They've been starting Quinton Dunbar in that spot.
Right.
Rookie Kendall Fuller has been starting a nickel.
Yes.
Playing over
Deshaun Phillips,
so
who struggled mightily through three games.
A lot of soft zone coverage.
Yep.
And, man, they've had breakdowns as well. Third down, they're brutal. They were great this past week against the
Baltimore Ravens. New nickel package this week, because once Sua Cravens got hurt, if he can't go and it doesn't look like he'll be able to go,
doesn't sound like it,
then you're going to have two linebackers playing in the nickel. Normally Compton stayed in and played with Cravens, but now you'll have Mason Foster playing. So that's an area to exploit as well.
It's a division matchup, so you throw everything out the window. But it wouldn't surprise
not the X's
me
and O's,
if, it
though.
Wouldn't surprise me if this was a little bit of a high scoring game. I don't know that the Eagles are going. I'm not saying the Eagles are going to give up 40 points,
right?
But I think that both of these teams offensively have some things that they can do to move the football.
What I'd really like to see the Eagles do, and I understand what they've been doing through the first four games, so much quick game, so much get Carson Wentz comfortable, theoretically not a lot of progression reading. I'd like to see them, and again, now you get into their receivers, but this might be the week because their receivers do struggle against man coverage. But I'd like to see them maybe take a few more shots here and there. You know, again, we're not saying change the whole pass game, because you still, you know, coming off this past week, you still want Carson Wentz to start this game and be very comfortable. But I would just like to see, you know, a few more shots.
It'll be very, very interesting. Greg, you and I will be watching the game together Sunday afternoon right here at the NovaCare Complex, and then we'll see you once again right here Tuesday night on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Appreciate the time here on Chalk Talk.
Thanks, man. Always enjoy it.
Great stuff from Greg. Again, you could follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That's just one way to support the show. But the other is to go on to iTunes, go on Stitcher, wherever you listen, give us a rating, and leave us a comment. I want to give a shout-out to Louis Gouvet, who rated the show and left a comment on our iTunes page saying how much he enjoyed all of the talk about schemes and explaining the finer points of the game. That's what we try to do here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. So thanks to Louie and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. But let's keep this show going. I told you earlier I wanted to profile a player that has really taken his game to the next level for this Redskins offense. Time to reveal who that is in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so the player that I want to cover is Brandon Scherff, who mentioned a little bit earlier with Greg, and he was a guy that I loved coming out of Iowa. Obviously, look, for good reason. He was a top 10 pick. I thought he was one of the top two or three players in that draft. Just under 6'5", 6'0", 4'5", so 6'4" and 5/8 inches. 319 pounds. He was a three-year starter at Iowa. He was a high school quarterback, a five-sport athlete in high school. He threw like in the 80s for baseball. He was a double-double guy. He played tennis. He threw shot put. Ridiculous athlete, you know, when he was in high school. And I loved watching him on film with the Hawkeyes. So it is good to see him doing so well, although I do wish it wasn't for one of our division rivals. You know, when I watched him at Iowa, he was their left tackle. He's obviously, he's the right guard for Washington. He's got great bulk. He throws his weight around, consistently gets movement off the ball, and that is carried over here in the NFL. He is a mauler in the run game, always looking to get his pound of flesh, you know, finishing blocks into the dirt, getting after guys, running them out of bounds, finishes opponents consistently. He plays through the whistle. I remember him absolutely dominating some of the best players on the other teams when he was in college. You know, whether it was Randy Gregory when he was in Nebraska on the line of scrimmage, or Ryan Shazier of Ohio State up at the second level, the dude was just nasty. And I mentioned the Jurassic Park reference. I was talking with some guys here at work. And for some reason, this scene came into mind from Jurassic Park, and it was the scene where Alan Grant is talking about how velociraptors, you are alive when they start to eat you. That is like the mindset of this offensive line. Like, these guys, they want to finish you. Whether it's Trent Williams, Scherf, LaValle, Morgan Moses, Spencer Long, these guys are a nasty bunch. It's the best offensive line the Eagles have faced so far this season, and it's going to be one of the best that they face overall in the 2016 campaign. So a really good group overall, and Scherf is one of the best players on that group. He can locate on space. He's a good puller. He's a good athlete. Doesn't let linemen into his pads. Just a really well-rounded player. I thought in college that he probably would be more of a guard. His foot quickness wasn't necessarily a strength in pass pro. And as a senior, I thought he had a little bit of issue with anchoring, but he did have a knee injury, so I thought that might have been something that could have had an impact there. Just a big, mean, physical kid, good lateral movement, strength at the point of attack, technique, and get the job done inside or out. I thought he was an early starter and a Pro Bowl player in any scheme, and he's definitely turned into that kind of a player. So if you're looking for a matchup in this game, Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan going up against this interior of the Washington offensive line, that's going to be really, really interesting to watch throughout this entire game. So that's certainly something that I'll be focusing on Sunday afternoon. So, all right, I teased it earlier. I caught up with Eagles defensive back Terrence Smith to talk about the role of a hook player in cover three. Let's get to that now in two technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for two technique.
Here now with Eagle safety, Terrence Brooks. And Terrence, I wanted to ask you about the hook curl player in cover three and just the basic responsibilities. Obviously, lots of iterations of cover three in football, especially at the NFL level. But in basic terms, what is the role of the hook curl player?
Really depends on your defensive scheme and what you want to do against certain formations. Really basic-wise, I mean, it's really just dropping right inside that seam player and just holding that off and not biting down on the running back to the flats or anything like that, because they always want to throw something in behind you. But for the most part, I mean, that guy is just there to rob things. I mean, he's a guy that can really lurk and just pick off a lot of balls just by sitting in that little hook, because that's where a lot of them are going to. But for the most part, I mean, just pretty much getting to your landmark and staying underneath everything else and driving down on whatever you see in front of you.
How hard is that, to knowing the fact that teams want to try and pull you away from that spot with stuff underneath to try and stay home? How hard is that at times?
It's very hard, because you can get guys who are very aggressive, and that's what you want to do against aggressive teams, is to try to throw something in front of their face to get them out of their spot and throw something in behind them. But for the most part, if you're a smart player and you're playing that position, you can make a lot of plays just off of playing that.
So the reason I want to talk about playing as a hook player in cover three is that the Redskins have been a pretty big zone team for most of the season. When they go into dime, they'll play a lot of man. But overall in base and in nickel, it's a lot of zone, especially on third down. And when I go back and look at a lot of the big plays they've allowed, especially on third down, they are the worst third down defense in the NFL. A consistent issue for them was wide receivers running free through soft zone coverage, and the quarterback just sitting back with time to pick them apart. And cover three is a big coverage for them. The Eagles have done a good job manipulating those zone defenders in the middle of the field. So for this game, that's something that could be a theme as we watched Carson Wentz and what he does when he drops back, especially on third down. So great stuff from Terrence. So thanks to him, Greg Cosell, as always, and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. thank you. And again, if you get the time, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Don't be afraid to leave a question on there too, because I'd love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. If there's ever anything specific you want me to hit on in depth, I will absolutely take requests from all of you out there. So wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment whenever you listen to the show. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.